This is Mary Fink, the Scarlet Leadership Institute. We're glad you've joined us today. We're here talking about building the best team ever, and we have with us Sarah Richardson from HCA. She's the CIO of the Mid-America Mid-America Division, and she's in Kansas City. Sarah, are you there?
I'm here, Mary. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I had you on speaker, and I think maybe it didn't pick up, so I picked up the phone instead.
Okay. We are glad that you're with us today. I've got your slides on, and people can see them. We are looking forward to talking with you about building the best team. I talk about you all the time, Sarah, about what a good job you've done with taking a group that was not performing at its highest level and making them into a very high-performing team. So I'd like to start with a question, and then you can just take it from there. And my question is, so what's the big deal about being a high-performing team? Is it not enough to have a group of high-performing individuals?
So I love the way you asked the question and said a little bit about the stage when I came here, because make no mistake that when I got to Kansas City to work with this team, they were incredibly high-performing individuals. And so from the surface, everything was getting done. You know, you think about the indicators and some of the metrics that we used at that point to measure the success of a team, they were meeting all of the requirements as far as the output of a team. That's right. They could meet metrics on an MOR, they could get projects delivered, et cetera. And I think, like with most organizations that have not had a succinct leader for a long period of time, you look under the hood and it's a lot of crazy and a lot of chaos. And so having high-performing individuals is fantastic if what you want to do is drive individual siloed business lines. What you find, though, is everything from efficiency, you know, do less with more, better, faster, cheaper, et cetera, the desire to continue to have both output, expectation, and delivery comes at a cost. And ideally, I mean, when I got here, we were the highest staffed division in the entire organization. And today, we have not added new headcount other than at one specific regulatory requirement project in 4 years through optimization and repurposing. And so that's been a big win, both with our CFO as well as the ability of the team to really try new hats on throughout the organization.
Great. Well, as I look at your second slide, making it happen in 2013, making it, IT being the it, you had four goals that you were looking at, and they were all lofty goals. Was one of them more important than another, or did you focus on one and then the other, or how exactly did you approach it?
Everything that we've done here from the time I got here, and the history of a little bit about it, is I really focus on 13 and 14 because those are the years when the team is foundationally where we need to be to move the things forward. And so I've been here since 2010, but when I got here, it was just the Kansas City market. And then almost towards the end of 2011, we consolidated with another division in our company to bring two divisions together. So went from being Kansas City, which is Kansas and Missouri, we picked up Louisiana, Mississippi, which was another entire division, and so we had to rebrand ourselves as what was now called Mid-America. And so bringing two teams together with, and I always joke, like there's this thing called Arkansas between us, and creating one culturally diverse team to deliver the same product was a tremendous, tremendous effort that I think everybody really enjoyed. But the key to all of that was aligning us on a common goal, like who are we? What is Mid-America? Who do we want to be? And literally putting that question out there and asking the teams, who do you want to be? What do you want your brand to be? What do you want to be known for? Garnered so many conversations and so many ideas that at the end of 12, after we spent all this time just formatting and getting everybody in the right seats and the right roles and everything, I said, okay, so what's 2013? What's our rallying cry for 13? And everybody said, it's making IT happen. And so there we went. And I said, okay, that means based on everything I've heard that we foundationally have to be strong. We have to know who we are, who our players are. We have to know one another. And recognizing what we do for the things that we do. Like, let's advertise. Like, you know, let's apply for awards. Let's let Nashville know what we do, et cetera. And we have to be able to have sustainable metrics and results. It can't be one-offs. One time does not make us successful. It's how do we sustain that? And so it's funny, in all of these, Mary, that the driver for us being more important than another is that the exponential growth occurring in healthcare, we have to be able, we had to be able to deliver what those requirements were going to be with what we already had. So we had to get better at doing what we already did.
Okay, so when you talk about foundationally strong, I know that the team wasn't that strong when you got there. I know the performance was probably pretty good from an individual standpoint, but what did you do specifically to make sure that the foundation was what you wanted it to be?
Without being a plug, I literally put every single director through Scarlet Boot Camp. We did it twice too, right? So the first time was got to Kansas City, and as an alum of the Scarlet Leadership Institute, huge believer in you have to set the same expectation for all of your leaders. So I came into a team that had people in their roles for 5 years, and some of them had been in their role for like 38 years. And so they had very different expectations about what success meant and what that looked like. So bringing all the directors together to say, this is what it means to be a director in this division. And then when we consolidated, we did that again with a new team. And so foundationally, everybody had the same understanding of what it meant for communication, for leading change, how to deal with conflict, how to prioritize. We started dabbling our toes in building a project management office, which today is quite robust. How to actively listen, how to do negotiations. So bringing Susan Williams in for negotiations was huge. And what did they know about themselves? I had one of my directors laugh, say, if I take another self-assessment survey, I'm going to throw up. And I said, I get it, right? But between DISC and StrengthsFinder and conflict assessments, et cetera, you really start to see where things align. And I will tell you honestly that those assessments were pretty telling. In a group setting that over time, and this is just a hard, honest truth, of my team of seven when I arrived, I have two that are the original players, and they are absolutely the right players in the right roles. And it's a tough decision to say, what kind of team do I want to build, and do I have the right people to do it? And today, two of the original seven are here, and they're here to stay, right, through all the filtering of all the different levels of what we've learned about ourselves as an organization, those two have earned and deserve their seat of where they are today.
Right. It is a tough decision to say, you know, maybe you're not the right person for this team.
Yeah.
But that's part of leadership is making the hard decisions. And I know that in our work with your groups, there were things where we would talk about a common language, and there were things where, as you said, they would take assessments. But I think one of the most important things I heard in my work with your groups was we have never sat in a room together and talked about any of this stuff. No matter what the very specific topic is that we're talking about, we just haven't talked about things. Our conversations have been limited to whatever the crisis of the day is or what I'm trying to get done and what I need you to do. I think it was just as valuable to have them sitting in the same room and talking together and learning a little bit about each other.
Yeah. Here's what's amazing to me is I had two of my primary directors who were really responsible for delivering the largest amount of the portfolio of the work, and they literally vehemently did not like one another, and they built their teams to distrust and not like each other as well. So it's pretty hard to build an organization when the two primary players don't like each other and their teams don't like and trust each other. And without that foundation of trust, and we did a ton of work around that, we continue to, you have nothing. And I'd have an offsite, and then anything that was discussed would come back, and everybody in the organization knew about it. And I thought, this is not going to work. This is not how you run a strong one team. And so that took years, truly.
It took years and also a lot of effort on your part. And one of the things I talked about when I put out the blast about this was your nonstop communication, because I think you really probably spent more time on that than anything else, making sure everybody knew what was going on. Everybody heard things at the same time. I know that you did things off-site, some that were business, some that were not business, some that were just getting to know each other and building the team. I know you have encouraged your women managers to do things together, and I know you have a women's retreat. I know you also encourage the men to have a men's retreat. And all of that goes into building the team that you want it to be, so that when you do have to do the work, you're not starting from scratch of, gosh, I wonder how they're going to take this, or I wonder how's the best way to ask them that. You already know that because you know them.
Yeah. I think about some of the things we did, you know, in the past, too, and you're right. People had never spent time together outside of work. They didn't know one another's spouses or families or kids or the things that interested them. They didn't support, hey, why don't you leave early on Friday because it's so-and-so's birthday, or just what I consider a familial bond. When you have a family type of atmosphere, and you can be a high-productive, high-producing, very cohesive team that's all about performance and metrics and driving to be the best, and still really like each other. It's not the dysfunctional Thanksgiving table. It's the every time we get together as a group, everybody looks forward to it so much that they truly, and they just, whatever comes out of the processes of those meetings, it's like, hey, let's go charge that mountain and do it together, because it's really like a brothers in arms types of thing. And it's awesome to see it. It's really wonderful. But once you get there, there's that constant fine-tuning. But communication, it was very uncomfortable for most people in the beginning because they weren't used to someone being so transparent and sharing everything that was appropriate. And they weren't used to that information then being cascaded to every single member of the staff. Hoarding information or being the only one who knows is, to me, the worst thing you can do in an organization. And so when you have directors who want the power of, I'm the one who knows the answer, that doesn't fly in my organization. You need to have people that know everything. And when I interviewed every single employee on the team when I got here, they said, we want to know what's going on around here. Like, things can't be secretive. And so when directors had to start sharing information, it really uncovered at the root of where we are today, and that's about behaviors. And today we really focus on how we deal with behaviors and how we have those crucial conversations around inappropriate behavior to building a really strong team.
Well, and in addition to inappropriate behavior, just disagreement in general, having conversations about those things where we have differing opinions is where the negotiation comes in, but also the crucial conversations. And I think that is information that has also been good for your team, because they can have an argument, they can disagree violently, and still come out and work together.
Yeah, it's like literally they get over it immediately and move on. Now, we're not there yet, right? I call it the 80-20 rule. I would say management level, 80% of the people are having those conversations. Staff level, for us, it's, you know, we've been thinking about it for a year for the team. You always remember when you implement big change, your team, like the staff line and those actually, you know, I call it doing the work, the boots on the ground, it takes them the following year, the year you've implemented it, it takes them the next year to really catch on and make it practice. And so at the leadership level, I feel very good about what crucial conversations means and what behavioral code of conduct, which we've coined it, means. At the staff level, it's something we continue to encourage, and there's a whole campaign in both one-on-ones, monthly messaging, newsletters, et cetera, about what that means and how we integrate it into the organization. And the other thing too, Mary, I think it's important to touch on, and this is why it almost becomes, I don't want to say it's exhausting because it's a love for me, but for a leader who doesn't have that, isn't tooled that way, find someone in your organization who is, that can help you do it. Because it has to be owned by the leader of the organization for it to work, but you don't also have to be the one that's designing and planning it all. But we really went to the grassroots, and every single thing we've done, we have a cross-section of all levels of employee to make sure we're not just creating crazy at the top and pushing it down.
That makes every bit of sense. So talk to me a little bit more about the behavioral code of conduct, because I know that was really one of your main themes last year, and you did a lot of things to that end. But what exactly are you after?
Absolutely. And so, you know, and on slide three, it's in 2013, it was our number one key accomplishment, minus what I call like the, it wasn't about productivity, this is about sort of organizational success. Behavioral code of conduct is really the organization, everyone's saying, you know what, we're really good at what we do. We have a lot of high-performing people on our teams, but bad behavior does not justify high performance. And when I say that, we had people hoarding information, people working in silos, recognition not being shared. And I don't think it was malicious. By no means was this ever a malicious thing, but resoundingly the teams came back and said, you know, how do we find a way to move ourselves to the next level? How do we, coining the phrase, go from good to great? How do we go from being just kind of who we are to being partners at the table, and the business sees us as these, you know, we change the game, we do all these other things? And I said, well, it starts from inside. So what do you think that means? You know, we have team norms. We have things like encourage constructive conflict, exemplify our values, assume good intent. What does that look like to you? So I literally sent out a survey to the team. I said, what do these behaviors look like? What should we, you know, what does it look like? What's start look like? And then what does stop look like in these spaces? So I picked the category, communication, trust, et cetera, that were most important, sent out a survey. Now, here I am on a regular day sending it out to my team thinking, if I'm lucky, 30% of the people are going to respond, right? I might get a few one-liners here and there, but I made it a template, made it really easy, and the leadership team and I sent it out and said, okay, what do you want to see more of? What do you want to see less of in these areas? We got back an 80% response from the team in less than 48 hours with 36 pages of consolidated data of 10 font.
Wow.
Now, the funniest part about all of that was how long it took eight directors and I to sit around a table to decipher 36 pages of 10 font data. It took us 8 hours to create a one pager from there. And then, of course, the whole process of cascading that through managers, the employee advisory group, the staff, et cetera. Just gathering the data, socializing the information, and saying this is what we agree to was about a six-month process.
Wow. So on average, how much of your time would you say is spent in this space develop your team?
Yeah, leadership development and organizational talent and transformational and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's funny, I probably spend about 60% of my time on making sure that this team is high-functioning, that we are building unparalleled, prepared future leaders for this organization.
So when you're doing that, you can't be in the weeds doing other things. Who gets the work done?
The team. I mean, so all my directors know what their expectations are. All the managers know what sort of their expectations are. So we've been very diligent. Again, the managers have – our managers are hybrid, about half working manager, half, you know, business manager. And so we really set expectations. We have monthly manager training that talks about what it means to do this. At the director level, you make sure that your managers are highly trained, highly focused so that they can handle that strategic work. You get in the weeds once in a while, but there's no way you can build a team to continually increase their output and increase their delivery if you're running around, for example, doing programming or answering the phone, you know, or worried about some of the basics. You have to hire amazing people who can deliver results and then trust them to do it. So our service desk, for example, last place. We were the worst in the company. My boss would send snapshots of our performance and text me and go, how does it feel to be last? And I'd be like, it feels awesome. And we hired the right director who knows how to drive the results. We set a timeline. You know, this isn't going to happen overnight. And so that individual who is absolute, because we are now in first place, took us about 14 months to go from last to first, has now become a consultant to other divisions on how to run an effective desk. So we found somebody awesome, and he reports to my director of operations. And so it's knowing what your scope and span of control is. My expectation to my operations director was, you hired the right person, here's the timeline you've established, put it in motion. I never got into their Kool-Aid in terms of how to do it. I trusted them when they told me this is how this will work. Regular updates, regular conversations, but I never got involved in actually doing it because I would just get in their way.
Right. And once you have that relationship with them, you know that you're going to hear from them if there is a problem or if they do have a question. So you don't really have to worry about it. And there's no way that you could do all the work. I mean, you're getting the work done through these amazing people. So kudos to you for going from last place to first place, number one, and number two, for understanding. We talk a lot about the learning curve and the time that it takes for people to get where they need to go and to be patient about it. And sometimes I think that's the hardest thing. It's not what you're doing. It's what you're not doing. You're not nagging. You're not pushing. You're not, you know, you're not being that person that every day is saying, why aren't we better? Why aren't we better? You're giving it some time as well.
Yeah, having milestones and checkpoints on everything we do. And so I think for any organization, having a project management office is going to be really your saving grace in terms of, are we doing the right things at the right time? Do the resources align? Does the spend align across the board? And then you share that with the business. The team starts to understand it. And that's how you get things done, doing first things, putting first things first, and being able to say no to things that don't fit into the mix, et cetera. I mean, that for us has probably been the number one thing that has catapulted us to a higher level of performance is the intake management process and setting appropriate expectations with our stakeholders.
Okay, we have a little interference, but I think we're okay. I'm going to remind everybody that if you have a question, if you will hit star 7, you can ask it on the phone, or if you're on the line, you can write your question in the box and just press the button. So, Sarah, move on to 2014.
There's a. Do you have an echo on your phone, Mary?
I do.
Okay. Okay. Talk through it.
Right. So 2014, exceptional results, and I know some of these things are things that that I've been aware of that you have done. But talk a little bit about some of these. Skip level meetings, for example, you know, people can go to who they need to go to, or they're talking to people that are one level above their supervisor. Tell me why you do that.
Absolutely. So a couple different things. For my direct report, so in my role, I've got division directors. So I've got app services, tech services, security, et cetera. And for that team, I literally went outside our company to get an executive coach, because it's like, how do you, what's that next level beyond what we're doing? And everyone asked me, like, why are you spending the money to do that? Don't you have people you can reach out to in Nashville, their divisions? I said, yes, but here's the deal. We're an enormous company, and we know what we do. We are tremendous at delivering healthcare and the business of healthcare and IT and all of that. I needed an outside individual who was a tried and true executive coach to be able to drive us on those leadership capabilities that have nothing to do with healthcare and IT, and be able to look at it through a different lens. And so this year, there's executive coaching for both me and for my direct reports. And it's amazing to see just the different types of things that they are focusing on and growing. And skip level means that you go and periodically meet with people one level under you to ensure that they are doing well. I mean, it's a touch base more than anything, and it's not, and it's just great. I mean, the doors are always open around the organization, but so all of the hospital IT directors report to my director of operations. I meet with every one of her leaders once a quarter just to keep the lines of communication open and have a really honest, open dialogue. And it's not formatted. It's really just a conversation that takes itself where it goes. And so everybody in the organization that's in a leadership role does that across the board.
Wow, that's really great. And then you do your retreats.
We do retreats. The men finally last year, I know they had the budget, and they were like, they wanted, you know, I said, you guys can't just go play golf and go eat wings. You got to really have an output from the session. And last year they did, and this year they have it on the books again. So now both men's leadership and ladies' leadership have a separate retreat where they go and focus on a specific, like that we just did the whole balanced life with Michael Hewitt from Canyon Ranch for the ladies, and it looks like the guys are all about having him come out and do their session too in October. So we really standardize having them learn something that not only can they take away and make their lives better, but will grow their teams and ideally their personal lives as well.
Excellent. I think that's great, because in the long run, that's just going to make everybody feel better about working with everybody else.
Yeah, it really becomes about the personal relationships, because everything is always about relationships and communication. And now they do things for each other versus doing things because that leader or that role asked them to do it. They do it because, you know, Bob asked them, not because the director asked them.
Exactly. Exactly. So as we look at your next slide and we talk about it's all about the team, talk to me a little bit about the engagement action plan.
Yeah, so employee engagement is something that is universally done by our organization at the highest level. So all 200,000 people within HCA are surveyed for employee engagement, and then every business unit has their results. We take the results incredibly seriously. We look at not only what are we doing really, really well, so that we can ensure we're focusing on continuing to do that work. We also look at our opportunities. Where are the areas where we know we need to improve? And then we put action teams around that and include people from all crosswalks of the organization. And then we validate the information and say, does this feel right? Is this what you're thinking? And this year we took a different approach. For the 13 results, we took the lowest results by job role. Because you can pull a cross-section and someone on the service desk can say, I'm great with communication, or I hear everything I need to hear, or I got plenty of people on my team to do the work. Service desk is very well staffed. You go down to the nursing analysts and they're like, we totally don't have enough people to do the work. And so we dig into what that means and what that looks like for them, and then what are the specific actions coming out of those responses. The biggest thing about employee engagement I have learned over the years is twofold. A, it's a point in time. So it's going to be how people feel at the time that that's happening. But B, culturally, what have you done to sustain the plans and the work that you're doing around it, but remind them prior to the survey, because if you go into a survey going, wow, we did all this great stuff, you know what you've done because you're doing it all the time. So we use the whole month before as a campaign to say, here's what you said, here's what we've done, here's where we've tweaked, here's where we think our opportunities still are, and let's go for this year's survey and see and do really, really well. So funny enough, I used to have employees who were like, when I first got here, they didn't trust the survey. They're like, it's not anonymous. I'm like, it's anonymous. And I'm like, I don't know who took it. I just know numbers. And
it's
people
true
say, well,
in every organization. It's,
yeah.
It's like, anonymous. And you and there's, I don't know how you prove that it is.
Well, and they're like, comments get shared. Well, comments used to get shared inappropriately, but I don't share the comments anymore. I read through them. I create, you know, sort of synopsis ideas for some of the leaders, et cetera. But, you know, it used to be, I want to figure out who said that. That's not the intent of the survey either. Now I have a team where I can, you know, summarize comments, we go after themes and ideas, et cetera. But one of our employees who used to refuse to take the survey and now says, if I take the survey this year, can we like stop having so much communication? And I said, I appreciate your point of view. So we talked through what that meant for her, but it's great to have somebody 4 years ago who like refused to take the survey, who this year's like, if I say everything's awesome, can we stop having so much information around this? And it was pretty funny. So now I have an engaged employee and who really tongue-in-cheek came up with some great ideas for this year's campaign.
Right. I know that one of the things you do is, and I think it was on a previous slide, but you do your Happy Tuesday, speaking of continuous improvement and communication. And you cover so many things in there, but I don't think anyone could read those, and I do read them, and not know what's going on in the department. So have you had good response to that?
I have. So I'm very lucky to have one of my mentors in business is Paul Connolly. He's our Chief Information Security Officer for HCA. Phenomenal individual. I worked for him for about 2 years throughout my HCA career, and he used to send out, and to this day he still does, 9-10 years later, Happy Monday. And the reason I made it on Tuesdays is that I was spending my Sunday nights working for 3-4 hours, and I thought, I got to find life balance, right? So now mine's Happy Tuesday. I do most of it Sunday and Monday. And it's every week, and I literally have never missed a week unless I'm on vacation or it's a holiday. So every week, a rather lengthy sort of newsletter, for lack of a better term, goes out to the team about what's happening, what you need to know. It celebrates our accomplishments. It gives you all kinds of just fun things, apps and words and podcasts and industry-relevant articles, and it's by choice. I send it via email. If you want to read it, read it. If you don't, it's not required. I'm not tracking who reads the darn thing. I've got 200 employees. I don't need to look at red receipts kind of thing. But if you want the information, it's there. And we do, obviously, through monthly messaging and et cetera. We have so many different vehicles. But here's what I found this year. So after all these years, it's information that says I'm kept, it answers the question, I'm kept well informed about what is happening here. And I did a focus group at one of my hospitals the other day. I said, all right, guys, we're getting ready to do the survey this year. How's communication? And they're like, we know everything we need to know about IT. We're good. They said the gap is with this business line and over here. So I've realized after all this time and energy, we're never going to score 100% on that because the gap now is communication from the business. But that has triggered what our hospital governance and our division governance processes look like. So IT, we've met the expectation and the need of what is going on. We now are seeing what business units were having challenges in receiving information, and now we target our strategic meetings with them to say, okay, what's coming, what do you need, how does that work, et cetera. But very much an evolutionary process because you can't solve a problem until you figure out what the root of it is.
Absolutely, you can't.
And if I didn't do Happy Tuesday, it's as much for me as anybody else. Now I know what's going on everywhere in my department and my division because people, most of the information in that newsletter is now given to me by team members. Where in the beginning, I had to go get it all myself. It took forever.
Right.
Now most people give me stuff in advance, I get pictures. It's just really cool way to stay in touch with your teams.
It really is, and I also love the way that you start with kudos.
That's a Joe Scarlett thing, though, right? So I remember one time I gave my newsletter to Joe and said, do you have any feedback? He says, yes, put accomplishments first, not last.
There you go.
So now I do. I have for over 2 years now.
Is a number one form of motivation, right?
Yes.
I heard my name.
Hey, there you are.
How you doing?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
Good. If I can just chime in with a couple of stories. You were talking earlier about no secrets, and I am a big no secrets person. It goes back to my predecessor who established Tractor Supply as a no secrets company. And having that mindset is not all that common, but it's very empowering. If you just make sure there are no secrets in the organization, everybody will talk to everybody else, and you tend to have non-hidden agendas. You have real agendas. One of the things that I used to do that I thought was kind of humorous and was also effective was what you could sort of sense when something wasn't right. And I would walk around the building, and I you talk to someone, hey, look, I appointed myself vice president of rumor control or vice president of rumors or something like that. And, you know, before you know it, people say, well, you know, I heard that something, and I would be able to say, well, you know something? That's absolutely correct, and we should have communicated it, and then I go about doing it. Or I say, listen, that's absolutely untrue, or here's what really happened. And you sort of create an environment where the people are open and communicative. I remember when Tractor Supply first switched our strategy away from farmers to marketing to hobby farmers, everybody was sort of up in arms, well, what's really going to happen, blah, blah, blah. Once we started sharing numbers about what we're really selling, and it was no longer a mystery, people saw that everything that had to do with hobby farmers was really selling, then all of a sudden people bought into the process. And just taking it one step further, when you don't keep secrets, that's empowering to other people. And the more, of course, the more people know, the more decisions they can make, and the less decisions you have to make. And, you know, effective leaders push decision-making as far down the ladder as possible, and you can do that best when you don't keep secrets.
Absolutely, you can. If I'm operating in a silo and I don't know what's going on in the departments around me, then all I know to do is what I do in my silo. I can't help you because I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah,
exactly right.
And we found so many people literally try on different hats and switch roles in the organization. So nobody ever knew that other people wanted to do other things because nobody asked. And when we started putting all these, you know, job opportunities and training and try this, so I had three of my directors switch seats this year. I had my security guy go to technical. I had a facility director go to applications and another facility director go to security. So literally three people like just switched roles because they wanted a new experience, and it was safe, fun, and enable for them to do that. And so it's been pretty exciting to have three brand new directors who are not new to the organization, just new to their roles, and the invigoration that has just sparked from having those types of conversations. A whole new set of eyes in the same role somebody else had, and they're all loving the fact that somebody else is doing their jobs, their old jobs, because they all said, wow, you know, I was just done with my old role, and I'm so happy you're in it, and everyone's moved on to it, and no one's in anybody else's Kool-Aid anymore. Everyone's literally like handed the job off to somebody else, and they're doing their new roles, and it's a really cool time to be in Mid-America IT, I think.
Yeah,
When you're rotating roles like that, you're preparing people for future leadership. If you've worked in a half a dozen different areas, you're much better prepared to move up to the next level than if you've been narrowly focused. So it's a great morale builder. It's a great learning experience, and everybody wins in that situation.
I always tell them, like, my job is to prepare you for mine. My job is to work myself out of a job. And it doesn't mean that I move or leave. It means when an opportunity comes up in the company, et cetera, they're prepared for it. If that's what they want, that's what I am teaching them to do. And I'm not protective of my role. Like, I have my job. I love my job. And I too, am always preparing for potentially what's next or different roles, et cetera. So when I'm teaching them, if they want to be a CIO, these are the skills I'm building for them. I mean it. Like, I share everything with them because they are capable. And how much more – it's really exciting when you know that if you were to leave or when you leave, your organization will succeed beyond even you because you've built that into them.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that is the mark of a great leader, is that when you leave, things carry on and they're still successful. It isn't that the place falls apart. That's not what you want.
They should be better. They should really, you know, Model Netics teaches us the job organization chain, that when you leave an organization, it performs better than you were there because you gave them everything that they needed to do. Now they bring their own brand to it. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of times I say you get them to a point and then it's time for you to get out of the way.
No question about it. The last slide, or the last slide that has content on it, is Sarah's focus. And you've got sustainability and stability. So are you trying to, now that all that you've brought about all this change, are you working on trying to have it be somewhat stable and sustainable? I mean, obviously you want it to carry on, but are you trying to have it stabilize a little, or are you always moving and shaking?
It's always both. So earlier, you know, Mary, my comment about, now I'm thinking about 2015 and 2016, the staff still catching up from 2013.
Right.
That's normal because they're doing all the work. You know, I've got people building screens and programming sessions and on the floors working with the physicians, working with the nurses. So their day-to-day is about servicing the customer so the customer can get back to taking care of the patients. My job is to make sure they have the ability to do that, you know, get rid of the roadblocks so they can provide better service to their customers. So for them, thinking about how do I have a crucial conversation based on a behavior I'd like to see handled differently, that's not what they think about all day long.
Right.
And I have to meet them where they are. And so all the ideas and all the things that we build into the organization, we then have what I now call the phase of baking it into the organization. So team's on board. It's just now having them put it into practice and become part of their daily routine. And you can't force cultural change. I mean, I've been here 4 years, and we finally would say, yes, we are one team, and here's what we're working towards. But truly, it takes the sustainability piece takes a long time for it to become routine, and it's a constant reminder. So we literally have it every month. We do something called monthly messaging. It's a template that the managers and directors share with in their staff meetings. We reinforce it every single month.
That's great. And I think you have to. Otherwise, you do tend to lag a bit. Let me ask you this. In your peer group, the group of other CIOs, mm-hmm. do you talk often and share information? And are you getting information from them and sharing what you're doing? And how do you stack up or what?
So the best thing about working for my company is that my peer group is not competitive. We are 100% collaborative and supportive of one another. So that's
great.
Just awesome because it's your job's crazy, and there's 13 other people in the world who know what it's like to be you every day. And so we're always sharing ideas and thoughts and processes, et cetera. So absolutely, every time. And we all have different flavors because every division is very different in terms of the culture. I mean, the business is very similar, but the culture of how things run. And we do. We share ideas all the time. I have two of my peers who I'm exceptionally connected to, and one of them is doing almost the same thing I am. We work in parallel on a lot of our talent initiatives as well as business. And a couple others, we just share different pieces and parts. So we get together every quarter for our regular business meetings, and part of that time we spend sharing and collaborating about how we grow our organizations because we share positions. I mean, a director of application services in my division is the same as one in the other 13. And some people do like to move around and be promoted into different opportunities. I'll tell you the hardest part, though, is geography. Getting people to physically move is a tough sell. And but that's what we do. I mean, we constantly are sharing because if someone has an opening on their team, the first group we reach out to is each other.
That's a great thing. And it does indicate, I mean, it's further proof that you're not competing, that you are collaborating.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of companies, a lot of people will tell you that they want to win and they got to be number one and they have to compete and do all these crazy things. And I'm 20 years in my career, and I'll tell you that anytime you're competing within your own company, nobody's going to win.
You're exactly right. Any last comments that you'd like to make before we open it up for questions? I know the point that I'd like to make is that all these things that have happened in your division, not one of them was random. Not one
right.
of them happened as a result of chance. They were all driven by intentional actions and a lot of communication. So is there anything that you want to add before we open it up?
I think just two things, Mary, is number one, I'm happy to help anybody think about what this would mean, any piece of it in their own organization, you know, through the connection we have with Scarlet Leadership Institute. If anybody has questions about what we've done, please reach out to me or through you, et cetera, and I'm happy to help. The other piece is that, to your point, none of this is easy, and none of this is just something that sounds like a really good idea and I'm going to do it for a couple months and move on. If you decide to do any of these things, then you have to stick with them and you have to have the sustainability and the plan and the buy-in from your leaders who are the ones also carrying the message. There are things that will flop and you have to not make it personal when you think, hey, we're going to do this. And everyone, after a while, it's like it's not resonating. Then don't make it about you. Make it about what's best for the organization. So when something doesn't go as intended, that it's not a personal failure. It's whatever reasons it didn't work out. But this really is a labor of love and has to be something you instill in the culture, and it takes quite a while to see the results of what it is you want to achieve.
Exactly. And I think the other thing to remember is that things run their course. Something that worked a couple years ago, maybe worked great for 18 months, has run its course, and now it's time for something else.
Yes. And be willing to know if that's what the organization needed and that's what they wanted.
Exactly. Joe, any last comments before we open it?
No, I think the conversation's been great. I'm sorry I wasn't here at the very beginning, but I think you've done a great job presenting the whole time. So.
Thanks.
Great. Well, now we would like to hear from you. If you've got questions, if you're on the phone, *7. If you're online, type your question in the box and hit send, and we will answer them.
Mary, this is Joe. Let me toss up a question that I know would be in the minds of some people. What do I do if I work for a boss who doesn't share information, doesn't build teamwork?
Is that a question for Sarah?
Yes, and you.
And you. So, Mary, I'll say I've had the floor quite a bit. I'm happy to chime in, but Mary, I'd love for you to answer first.
Well, my ideal organization is one where there is communication coming at everyone from every direction, and everyone feels the responsibility to get what they need. So, you know, there's a limit to how much time you can spend one-on-one or emailing or having meetings or being on retreats or any of that stuff. I like to instill in every person in the organization that responsibility that if there's something else I need to know, if there's something I just want to know, there are times when we don't think about what somebody might want to know just because they're part of the organization but is not directly related to what they do in the organization, that they will come and ask. And if it's not something that is protected information, and very little is, that I, as a leader, am going to be willing to share that with them. I think a lot of times it's a time factor. Leaders think they don't have time, they're busy doing. I think a lot of times it's because they haven't backed off, as you have found, and spent the greater amount of time building your team and staying in touch with them and perhaps asking them what they need from you. Not everyone gets that at first, and sometimes we have to help our leaders come along. We have to help develop them as well by asking them the hard questions or going to them and saying, I need to know this or I'd like to know this. Can you help me out? I think encouragement, when we do get what we need or when there is, you know, great communication, then we thank people. You know, everything we do reinforces something, so we want to be sure that we're reinforcing the behavior that we want to see continue.
Yeah, and it's funny, Mary, in getting a lot of this established, it was a matter of building consensus versus selling my ideas. So if it had just been my idea, it wasn't going to happen. And it took time to build consensus to figure out the different pieces and parts that we were going to pursue and be in agreement to do. The other thing, too, I think sometimes it's about not really taking no for an answer. The first time you submit an idea, if it isn't widely accepted, especially with your boss, you think about the context and you say, well, what could I do, you know, to bring this forward differently? What could I do to work towards making this an opportunity? And some things take a couple of years to take root. You start to learn, you know, Joe's point, what happens if they're not interested, not sharing. I say plant the seed, and then it'll eventually start to germinate when you put the right pressures on it, if it's the right thing to do for the organization.
I think you're absolutely right. What other questions are out there? Well, if there are no questions, we will bring this to a close. I want to remind everyone that within 24 to 48 hours, the recording of this call will be on our website. And so if there's someone that you think you would like to have hear it, you can suggest that. Also, if you're interested in the slides, and I did have one note that someone was having a hard time seeing the slides. If you haven't seen them or if you're interested in having them, if you will email me, mary@scarletleadership.com, I'll be happy to send them to you. So if there are no other questions, Sarah, thank you so much for being with us. You have so much to share and so much to offer, and I love my time with you. So it's always great to have you on the phone and chat with you and learn what's going on new in your part of the world. We will be back together on April the 17th. We are talking to several people about being our guests at that time, so stay tuned, and we will send out information about that closer to the time. Thank you so much for being with us, and we wish you a good day.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.